It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Centuries-old practices like saunas, cold plunges, and bathhouses are having a renaissance in the Midwest. Backyard sauna builders are trying to keep up with demand, and the culture around it, it's all booming.
This pleases Michael Nordskog. Nordskog wrote the book The Opposite of Cold, about the history, culture, and practice of Finnish sauna in the North Woods.
Sauna's a way of life for Nordskog. More than a decade ago, he built one on his 1800s farmstead in Lafarge, nestled in a valley in the Driftless region. Sits alongside a spring-fed stream just a stone's throw from his farmhouse kitchen table.
It is here that producer Rochelle Wilson and I were introduced to the Finnish sauna experience with Mike and his wife Jeannie. Mike starts by explaining how to pronounce the word.
Well, the way to go is sauna, as in the Finnish pronunciation. It's really the one Finnish word that is generally well-known in English, and so I think we should give tribute to them. But if you say sauna, the room is still going to be a wonderful place to be, and you're going to have a great experience.
You're not going to run me out of here.
But you might, right. You might offend the purists.
You know, there are lots of bathhouse cultures around the world. What is unique about Finnish sauna culture?
You know, all of them have similarities, of course, heat, and, you know, you're doing something with humidity in that room. I would say in terms of folk architecture, you need stones, you need heat, you need water, and you're throwing a lot of water onto the rocks eventually. Some water, a lot of water, depending on your discretion, but you have to have those elements. And so you're kind of alternating in Finnish sauna between really strong dry heat and then throwing water on the rocks, which doesn't raise the temperature. It feels like it does. It just extremely raises the humidity.
What brought you to saunas? Because from what I understand, you've had them in all the places you've lived almost.
Well, yeah, I grew up in northern Minnesota in a town with a lot of Finnish immigrants, with a lot of Scandinavian immigrants in general. And my grandparents had a cabin on the lake. It's the same sauna that's on the cover of my book. And it's one that I got to experience my whole life. And at some point in the 1990s, the building was kind of tired. So my brothers and my dad and I, we got together and rehab that building and kind of rededicated it. And in studying about that and what we should do, the ethnography part of it really, you know, caught fire for me. And I dug a little bit deeper. And I haven't had one in a home before, actually, until we moved to this farm where we are now 15 years ago. And I don't know, it was probably about 4 or 5 years in, we finally had the sauna operational here.
What was that like for you to have it up and running and to use it as part of your lifestyle, your routine?
It's great because the cabin sauna is more like a vacation thing, and you're up there, you know, even at greatest frequency, maybe once every month or once every 6 weeks. Having it here, we do it regularly, every week, and sometimes twice a week. And by doing that, you get to kind of get a feel for the sort of the long-term health benefits of it, mental health benefits and physical health benefits, both for me. I just have a couple of chronic conditions from, like, I've had Lyme disease on a couple occasions, and, you know, the joint inflammation and those sort of things. It's good for that. Seasonal affected disorder, you know, you go and do sauna and cold plunge, and what I like to say is it just destroys stress. That process does.
Yeah.
You come out of it with your ego has kind of gone through the ringer, and you're just a much more objective and rebooted person.
So Jeannie, what was it like for you to be introduced to sauna by your spouse and really envelop the sauna culture?
Envelop is a great word, isn't it? So my experience, I tell Mike this often, I think the only time I'd ever had a sauna before was in a Best Western hotel with a swimming pool where I was going for swimming lessons. And then off of the locker room, there was this tiny little room, and you'd, you know, giggle and go in there with your friend, and it was stiflingly hot and you couldn't breathe. And I didn't understand why anybody would do that. The air was dry, which is the wrong thing. And it was really very unpleasant. And that was my experience until I about 30. I lucked into this wonderful guy with a cabin on up in northern Minnesota. And he introduced me to traditional sauna. And it was a completely different experience. And it was sort of a meditation. It was a ritual in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It took a lot of doing. You had to split the wood, start the fire, stoke it a few times, put some water up on the rocks to get warm. And then you just, you know, you slowed down and you went in there. And it's, we like to refer to it as slow hygiene, because the reality is you can get clean in there. You can take a bath. And we used it as a place to bathe our whole family when we were up at the family cabin, because the cabin had no running water, has no running water. And so we would warm up some water, we'd have a bath, wash hair, scrub up. And then after all that, then generally the kids would go out and then we could settle into the more, you know, the steaming, pushing the heat a little bit and relaxing and letting the mind kind of unwind with the shoulder tension and all the other things that it's good for.
Do you think it's changed your outlook at all? Has it changed your anything within you?
Oh my gosh.
I don't, you know.
Yeah, I think it's part and parcel of a trend in my life towards slowing down, really savoring the moment, finding the beauty and the ritual, there's that word again, in really basic human needs. You know, we need to eat, we need shelter, we need to bathe now and again. And anybody who enjoys making a pot of soup from scratch or, you know, baking something from really basic ingredients will understand the joy of a sauna this way. You split the kindling, you build the fire, you tend it, you stoke it a few times, and then you go in. And, you know, after you've gone to that much trouble to build a fire and warm up the water and warm up the room, you don't want to rush that, the rest of it. So then you linger. And when we sauna, we're over there for at least an hour once we're in the room, and sometimes longer. I mean, it just, you stay as long as you need to. And sometimes that's longer, and sometimes, you know, it varies. And usually after a few rounds of steam and a cold plunge, if you are so inclined, you're just, you know, you're broken free from constraints. And it took me a long time to do the cold plunge, and I did it on my own time. I have an evangelist here who who started cold plunging regularly and really, really preached it hard. And I said, I will do it when I want to do it. And I finally did it, and now I do it on my own. I don't need any coaxing.
We're talking about the history and tradition of Finnish sauna culture in Wisconsin with Michael and Jeannie Nordskog. Michael's book is called The Opposite of Cold, The Northwoods Finnish Sauna Tradition. And I'm sitting with Mike and Jeannie at their kitchen table in Lafarge in their farmhouse and about ready to head out for my first proper Finnish sauna. Can you talk about the architectural beauty of these saunas, of these little houses? And we can do this more as we go and take a tour, but just to talk about how they're made, how they're constructed, and the different materials that can be used?
Yeah, one thing to start with, I think, is, you know, saunas are very common in the upper Midwest, especially in the northern tier of Wisconsin, you know, in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, northeastern Minnesota, northern Minnesota in general, corresponding with places where there was a fairly large amount of Finnish immigration. But that's, I like to talk about it as sort of being, you know, one of those cultural features that survived the melting pot, and the rest of the culture adopted it as well. And a lot of those people, of course, were Scandinavians who maybe had a little more familiarity with it. But it's a natural fit for us here, just like hockey is a natural fit for people in the Midwest. And so the buildings, you see them all over, especially in lakeside settings, and you kind of know, you know, what's this extra building here? Well, if you're a Midwesterner, you know that's probably a sauna, whether it's on an old farmstead. There's just a lot of innovation in it right now, striking buildings. It's a smaller building where, you know, one thing I like about building a sauna is you feel like you can afford to use finer materials. Mm-hmm. And the one material I think that's definitive of saunas in North America and the upper Midwest is the use of northern white cedar. The cedar boards for the paneling inside. Yeah. It's a really long lived wood, and it really has a telltale fragrance to it. And, it, you know, nowadays people use the related species from out west, but one and the same with both of those. It really, for a lot of people, that's sort of synonymous with sauna is the smell of cedar. Whereas in Finland, you go into saunas and they don't have that species over there, huh. So they don't use it.
Are saunas here having a moment? Is this kind of a cultural awakening for saunas?
It's really been fascinating to watch it. I mean, about the time I wrote the book, there was certainly a lot happening more with public sauna, and you started to see these organizations that, you know, made public sauna available, often built on a trailer so that it can be moved to, say, a popular lakeshore for a popular event or for private events somewhere. That has just really blossomed. But with COVID also, and then I think the emphasis on personal health and self-care that came out of that, and maybe the need to have, you know, something self-sustaining in your own homestead, the popularity of at-home saunas has really gone through the roof too. And, you know, in that context, saunas can be built inside the house, but when I hear the word sauna, I tend to think of a building that's on its own out there, and that which lends itself maybe more to having a wood-fired stove, and all those elements really play into the pleasure of the activity. You know, it's building a fire rather than throwing a switch. It takes longer to do. It takes longer for it to heat up, but then you have the roar of the fire, you have the flickering firelight, you have the smell of smoke, you know.
It's meditative.
Savory, and mm-hmm. Yeah.
After hearing Mike and Jeannie talk about the magic of a Finnish sauna experience, it's time to test it out. So we get into our swimsuits and head out to the backyard. Mike and Jeannie's sauna is a small structure lined with fragrant cedar panels. The hot room's wood-burning stove heats up the stones. The thermometer on the wall creeps up. I climb up to the top bench and into the hottest part of the room.
I felt the heat rise when I came up these steps, these two little steps. What temperature are we? I can't really tell. What temperature are we at here?
The temperature is about 188 degrees in here now. I keep blinking to make sure my contact lenses don't dry up. Mike says saunas go as low as 160 degrees and can top out above 230 degrees.
Now I'm starting to sweat here. It's starting to flow, which is exactly where you want to get before you throw any water on the rocks.
At this point, it's a dry heat, but there's water that's starting to bubble next to the wood stove for the next stage in this sauna experience.
It sounds like tea water.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yes.
And this is a stove that's built custom for sauna use, so it's got this capacity to, you know, cradle the rocks around it.
I'm starting to sweat. Woo! Yep.
After about 15 minutes, I need to take my first break and step outside. Alternating between the heat and the cold is part of the sauna ritual. Oh,
wow. So I would suggest just stepping out quickly.
Okay, I'm going to step out.
Too.
I can still see the steam coming out.
And even without the clogs, step on the ground.
Come on.
After our bodies drink in the frigid 12-degree air outside the sauna door, we head back in for another round, and Mike starts up the main event, pouring water on the rocks.
Okay, we're going to do two scoops.
Okay,
here we go. Oh, wow. It's like a roller coaster of steam coming at me. I'm feeling it. Yep. Holy moly.
And it stings a little if your
it's
hands
stinging.
Are...
It's stinging, yeah.
Are you catching these?
During our next break, producer Rochelle and I look at the cold plunge tub with trepidation and decide to try just a little splash of ice water on our face and hands.
All right, Rochelle, this is going to be short and sweet.
All right.
Okay. Oh, yep, that's cold, that's cold, that's cold. Uh-huh.
Yep, and even yep, though yep. I'm not ready to take the plunge yet and climb all the way into this tub of icy water, Mike shows us how it's done.
Woo!
We leave you at the icy tub outside the Nordskog sauna on their farm in Lafarge, where Michael and Jeannie so graciously let us in on their weekly sauna ritual. Michael Nordskog's book is called The Opposite of Cold. This piece was produced by Rochelle Wilson with technical direction from Sarah Hopeful.